Hello. My name is Amy Cantu. I'm a librarian here at the library, and we'd like to thank you for coming tonight. We are launching an archive, the Ann Arbor Film Festival Archive, and we have Donald Harrelson to talk with us tonight. Just a couple of words before we get going. We'd like to thank Donald and David Donnell for all the help getting us the programs and some of the other artifacts that we've used to help build the archive. It's right at the very beginning. We like to say when we launch a site that this is just the beginning. It's just a launch. It will get bigger. There will be many more items added, especially after the 50th this year, so stay tuned. We are filming tonight's program, so if you would refrain from using your cell phones, be sure you turn your cell phones off. And at the end of the night, if there are questions, we have a microphone stand in the back. If you would please use that, that way we will get your question on film as well. And now I would like to introduce my partner, Andrew McLaren, who will give you a little demonstration of the archive.
Evening, everybody. Thank you for coming tonight. We really appreciate the support here. Let's see if I can find, we have so many things in this doc. So what we wanted to show you tonight is the beginnings of the Ann Arbor Film Festival archive. The first question you might want to ask about this archive is the 50th festival is nearly 2 months away. Why on earth are you guys launching this now and not launching it when the festival happens? And the reason is that this is just a beginning. You're going to see a lot of missing pieces in here. And a lot of those missing pieces we're hoping can be filled in by some of the people in this room. We're hoping to really build a complete archive that really tells the story of the last 50 years of the Ann Arbor Film Festival. And that includes a lot of different things like the programs. And we have a lot of the programs in here. I'll give you a little walk through some of these programs. We have a number of the programs, and you can go in and remind yourself of what films were there 45 years ago. And you also get to see the development of the style as the film festival became something larger and something more and more professional and really grew into what it is today. It wasn't always that. It was just the Cinema Guild for a while. And now it's really a world-class festival. And it, when we lay this out like this, you can really see how it's developed and how it's grown. But you'll also see that we have some missing pieces in here. You'll see we jumped from 1 to 4. And we're hoping that if anybody has 2 and 3, they'll look around and contact us, and we can fill in all these holes and have 1 through 50 by the time the 50th launches. Another thing that we have in here are we have all of the Ann Arbor News articles that were written about the Ann Arbor Film Festival. So there are about 80 articles in here right now. It gives another interesting portrait of how the Experimental Film Festival was viewed by the very square local newspaper. And how that view came to change over the years and how they actually came to respect it, which is not initially the case. So you can scroll through all of those and you can see big, beautiful scans of all the original things along with OCR text for everything, so you can take a look at all of the articles, print them out, see them in any kind of format that you wish. We also have a lot of photos. Again, looking for more photos. If you have taken photos at receptions around town of any of the advertisements that were up around town over the years, we would love to have those. We would love to be contacted by you, and we would love to add those to this collection. We have a number of photos, but a lot of them are just from the last 5 or 6 years. We don't have a lot from the earlier days, and we know there must be some out there, and we're hoping to add those to this collection. So if you have anything, we would love to hear from you. And one of the ways you can really help us is with interviews. You'll see here, all of our interviews right now are with Donald Harrelson. One of the things we're going to be doing between now and the 50th is interviewing as many people as possible. Folks who are on the board, folks who worked for the film festival, folks who attended the film festival, folks who took tickets at the film festival. We want to hear the stories that people have of what the film festival has meant to them, how they've been involved, what it's meant to them over the course of their lives, and what it is to Ann Arbor. And again, if you have a story, we would love for you to contact us, and we would love to interview you. By the time the 50th Ann Arbor Film Festival happens in 2 months, this website is going to look very different. You're going to see a lot more stuff on here. You're going to see a much more robust picture of what the film festival is and what it means to Ann Arbor. And we're really hoping that you can help us with that. But in the meantime, we hope that you take a look through here and remind yourself of some of the festivals that you've been to and have a good time with some of those memories. So thank you very much.
And now we're very pleased to introduce Donald, who will take you through his history of the film festival. Please give him a hand.
Okay, so before I get started with what I'm going to talk about, I do want to point out a few other things with the library, because this library is so fantastic, and I really have to give a special thanks to Amy and Andrew, but really the whole entire downtown library, the Ann Arbor Public Library system, because they took this on as a project. It's a lot of work, and they do so many other things with us, and obviously a lot of other parts of the community, but the DVD collections that we started putting out 4 years ago, they have copies of those. So you can check those out, and you can see films that played in the Ann Arbor Film Festival. They have artwork you can check out, which includes some posters. So if you want to have one of our posters up, well, you could probably get one from us. But they do have it here in the downtown district library as well. And so it's just a fantastic resource, and we're very thankful for all the work that they've done on getting this project going and really being sort of a hub for film as an art form within Ann Arbor and for the people that live here. So I think I'm going to successfully close this. And we'll start with, okay. So before I get started, I also do want to thank our program director, David Donnell, because David has done an incredible amount of work, and David's right in the back there. David's done an incredible amount of work doing a lot of this research, finding the materials, helping organize them. And with 50 years, it's a lot. There's a lot of basements and attics and materials that we didn't even know existed or we've been trying to track down. So as Amy said and Andrew said, this is an ongoing project. And we're going to be looking for some people in the community here locally and nationally to help contribute pieces. You'll even notice tonight as I show some images, I happened to find them last night, and I took a snapshot, and so you're going to see a poster from the second film festival that I hadn't even seen before. I just discovered it in a basement last night. So this is ongoing. It is very much the beginning and sort of a living archive, and we're excited that it's going to be something that people can participate, not just here locally, but internationally as well. So the challenge of to try and talk about our history in this archive launch is that I've been with the festival 5 years. It's been going on 50 years, so I can't really tell you stories from back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And there are people that were here. In fact, some people in this audience have been at most of the film festivals that have happened here in town. And I definitely invite people to participate in this. If you have an anecdote or a story, again, there's a microphone in the back, or a question or an interjection. I want this to be informal, and I don't want to present this is the only version of that history, because there are a lot of great stories that we want to make sure we uncover. So what I did is that I interviewed four of the key directors of the film festival, predecessors of mine, and we're going to play some audio, we're going to look at some of the imagery, and we're going to sort of piece together sort of like a lecture documentary for a large portion of this, and then I'll open it up for some comments and questions at the end. So I definitely want to thank George Menupelli, the founder, Vicky Honeyman, who ran the festival for 15 years as the director, Ruth Bradley, who wrote a dissertation on the first 20 years of the Ann Arbor Film Festival and also served as the director for several years, and then Christina Hamilton, who served as the director in the early 2000s. And so the four of those directors, we're going to hear some audio, and we're going to sort of work our way through those images. So let's get started with the beginning. So George Menupelli, the founder of the festival, back in 1963, and he was a professor at the School of Art and Design at the time, and very much had the vision for what is currently, well, I guess it will always remain currently, the second oldest film festival in North America. So San Francisco started a few years earlier very much as a showcase for feature films, foreign feature films. And that festival's, you know, now in its 53rd, 54th year. George had a vision for a platform and a celebration, an event, where films that weren't theatrically, you know, 90 minutes and going to have a life in the theatrical realm, had a place to be celebrated and shared and experienced, and those filmmakers to have a place for their film to be seen. And so from the very beginning, the Ann Arbor Film Festival was showing a lot of short films and a lot of films that were dealing with controversial subject matter and weren't necessarily going to have a commercial life to them. And that's, in my mind, very much the spirit and the origins of independent film, also very much the origins of experimental film. And we tend to use those words quite a bit, but it really is very much about artists who are working with film and want to share that with audiences. And the cinema is a fantastic place to do that. So let's see. I think what we're going to do here is I'm going to shift over to, you're going to see me go back and forth between some audio clips and back to this. So I think we're going to get started with George. We're going to let George get us started here. And I don't think this part needs any introduction. He sort of talks about how he viewed the graphics. And a lot of these directors, I had them talk sort of about some of the visual aspects of what they were doing.
Well, they're sort of like, in a way, scrapbooks, and they have some historic value. They're about the things that were going on in Ann Arbor locally, and then, I guess, nationwide or worldwide, socially, culturally, politically. And they were personal. On one hand, you know, people I knew, people who had, you know, contributed to the festival in different ways. Their works, fragments, autobiographical fragments of our lives, of festival lives. The artists we knew, the artists that contributed, and those who are no longer with us. And so it was a it's a kind of scrapbook of the visuals, what was selected visually of what we were doing and what was going on and what we thought should be going on and what we thought that people should take notice of. You know, remember the Kennedy assassination brochure was, this was probably the most shocking thing we did, was Lee Harvey Oswald on an autopsy table with a huge scar running down his middle where they, I guess, examined his inside. That was not a pleasant thing to receive in the mail, but I think that energy and that electricity, I don't know what current it was. It wasn't AC or DC. It was some other current. Got people to want to be part of the festival, filmmakers, and to submit their films. And I think the brochures had a lot to do with the amount of films we received and where they who sent them.
So George was pretty much the designer of this first 20 years of the Ann Arbor Film Festival. So for him, in a large part, this was like an art project. He was manifesting a lot of his ideas and his visions and responding to what was happening politically through each year of the festival. And as we go, we'll sort of hear more about that and see some of the progression. So I have one other clip with George talking. And these are all about a minute and a half, 2 minutes long. Was that loud enough? Could people hear that? Yeah? Okay.
This year, it was a very provocative one. Two women getting closer together, scantily clothed, and embracing, sort of, all in a quite stylistic way, very, very dignified, given the subject matter. Well, at the time, there was a shopping guide in town called the Ann Arbor Advisor, where you look to see what was on sale at Kroger's, that type of thing. They always had a guest column. In 1963, they gave it to the John Bird Society, who accused the university and myself of showing pornographic films. And so, wouldn't you know, the dean of the college, who never really attended any of the festival screenings, nor did many of the visual arts faculties, took me to the vice president's office to explain this phenomena. And the charge was that we were showing films that depicted explicitly masturbation. So I got taken by the ear to the vice president's office, and he said, "All right, Manupelli, yes or no, did you show a film that depicted masturbation explicitly?" And I said, "Sure." He said, "Don't give me any shit, Manupelli. I want an answer right now." Well, we had a film called Jirovi, and it showed a young man in a loincloth and, if I remember correctly, a wreath on his head, prancing through Golden Gate Park and San Francisco, and finally he lay down and the camera went to his face and he had some sort of ecstatic look on his face, and that was the extent of the film. So he said, "I'm waiting for your answer, Manupelli." I said, "Well, sir, I have never masturbated, nor have I ever watched anyone masturbate, so could you give me some idea of what it looks like so I can answer you?" "Get out, Manupelli, get out of here. I don't want to ever see you again." So I left, I guess, with my job.
So some of these images are not actually in the library's archive yet. In fact, this one was taken just today from a framed picture, and some of these other ones were even just uncovered yesterday. So some of these images we're still working on. So you're seeing some stuff that's like fresh off the presses, but it's really camera. So we will end up getting more of these in better quality than some of what you're seeing. So I think that leads us to our next voice from the festival past, Ruth Bradley. And let me also say that George Manupelli will be at the 50th Festival. We're very excited to have him here pretty much for the whole week. And Ruth is also committed to coming. So Ruth Bradley has probably not been to the film festival, I think, in about 25 years, roughly. So we're very excited to have both of them coming in for our 50th celebration. So again, as I said, Ruth, she did her dissertation at U of M on the first 20 years of the film festival. Fantastic read. I recommend it. It's great history. And she then took over the helm as director around the 20th. And she's somebody who was involved for a long time before that happened. So sort of this transition with George. And she's the one that turned it into a nonprofit, a 501c3. And that was sort of a big turning point for the organization, which up to that point had been sort of a little more informal in terms of just how it was organized and managed. So we have a few insights from Ruth. And let's see what she has to say here.
Well, I never was, my attitude, which is still what I do down here, is you just let people do what they want to do. I don't kind of say, "Oh, we want this approach," or "We want, you know, whatever." It's like, here, make a poster, make it beautiful, and kind of let people do what they want to do. Rob was representing Cinema Guild as well, I think, because he was on Cinema Guild. I was on Cinema 2, which was one of the different film societies. They're all gone now, but... So Rob was really kind of also working with them as one of the at least nominal co-sponsors of the festival. My favorite story about graphics, to tell you the truth, isn't about any, I don't remember what year it was, but I was taking the entry forms to the post office for the mass mailing. And this had to be right around like one of the last years that George did the graphics. And I took him to the post office, and the postal guy in the back of the post office, because I got to go on the back door with these like bags of entries, and the guy said, "Where's the horse on it this year?" I said, "What do you mean, where's the horse?" He goes, "Oh, there's always a horse somewhere on one of these graphics." And indeed there were, because, you know, George was into the ponies. And as I vaguely recall, I think he co-owned a trotter or a racehorse. And so somewhere, it might have been just a little tiny picture somewhere, but an awful lot of those graphics, you're going to find, especially the entry forms or the tickets, they're the horse.
I was looking for more posters with horses, but this is about as far as I got. So when I talked to George, he said he was really, really into the racing of horses. That was a passion of his. Okay, then we have a little more of Ruth's sort of background. This one centers around the 20th, which is right around the time that she was taking over the reins of the festival.
I mean, I'll tell you the truth. When I took it over, it was the 20th year. That's it. It was year 20. Now I'm remembering. And George had left, said, I'm done. I don't want anything more to do with it. And Woody, who really was doing all the work for him, said, I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore. And, like, we're sitting there. And I had said, and I don't think this would have been a bad thing. I advocated, all right, let's make this, instead of the 20th Ann Arbor Film Festival, let's make this the last Ann Arbor Film Festival. Let's just put on the biggest fucking party we can possibly imagine, and let's call it the last Ann Arbor Film Festival. Not unlike the way the Ann Arbor Jazz and Blues Festival handled itself. Everybody, especially Cinema Golf, said, oh, no, you can't do that. No. Wow, what are you talking about? I said, we'll just make a new festival after this one. Because the whole point about being in the arts is you have to make it new, and you can't become institutionalized. And if George taught us anything, it was that. And they all got really upset and said, no, we have to keep this. I said, we just take the mailing list and you call it something else. You can sell the new reinvented, you know, improved Ann Arbor Film Festival. But no, they wouldn't go there. And so at that moment, I think it really became an institution and not like free-for-all.
So I, for one, am really glad that didn't happen, because I think the continuity in the history is really fantastic. And, you know, I definitely appreciate that sentiment as well. You know, I can understand, you know, different eras and wanting things to sort of play themselves out. But, you know, from my perspective, it really is fantastic looking at these past 50 years of the history and that story and the sort of the ups and downs and the ways that those relate. And I also forgot to mention that that Ruth has continued being involved in film. She ended up going down to Ohio University as a film professor. And so she's started another film festival down there and been very active in the experimental avant-garde film community nationally as well. Okay, so next up we have Vicky, and Vicky is still here in town, and so this recording was done right over in her shop, Heavenly Metal, and sat down with me, and it was tough for me to cut this down because Vicky's just such a lively person to talk to and was really excited to talk about the many different designs in the many different years, and so I picked a couple highlights just as far as, you know, some of the years she really, really was excited about talking about. So we'll listen to a couple clips from her and look at some of the different pieces.
Before the festival started, before I started bringing in grant money and sponsorships that would allow us to print more of a booklet, forever and ever and ever, George Manupelli started the way the film program was printed out was on this huge piece of paper that was folded up and had all these different images that weren't necessarily in any way specific to the festival, but they were just all graphically great things that we would lay this big board out on this table, and we would stand there about 3 o'clock in the morning because we would have these printed literally 2 days before festival opened, because we pre-screened until a few days before. It was crazy. And it was during my time that I finally started to realize, wait a second, I'm the boss here. I have control over this, and I don't have to live so crazy without sleep. And so at any rate, we followed George's design of using this big sheet of paper that we printed on both sides that we would rush off to the printer, you know, at like literally 7 o'clock in the morning after having stayed up all night, cutting out, you know, found images, and then writing stuff. And if you look, You'll see there's some penis prints on these also, if you want to go further back.
We don't have those for this presentation, but you're welcome to browse through the AADL's digital archive on your own time. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We were sort of sitting at my computer scanning through all the images, so you might even hear a few clicks on this next one as I'm sort of looking at some of the different images.
Huh. This is the 31st. Like, that's me right there. This is Don's wife.
That's Vicky in the lower right.
God, I don't
bottom.
Know who that is. But he took photographs of all these people who were part of the festival. And George
Hardnett.
God, I don't remember who that is. Oh gosh, I can't remember. But let's look at another one. That's Don. That's
this is number 12.
Me. That's Matt.
And somebody with hair.
Yeah. So anyway, he shot all these pictures. We did this photo shoot, and isn't it fabulous? I mean, don't you just love it? Don't you love this? So here is Don using his love of the eye image to the biggest wonderful extent that he could, and faces and just the juxtaposition of all these films are so not related but then interrelated. Yeah, it's a fabulous poster. Fabulous. And as you can see, he's very much into less is more, the simplicity. And we were able to, you know, to run some color because we started getting, by then I was getting grant funds so that we had some money to spend. Fabulous, isn't it?
So about 5-6 years ago, we got some of these frames, some of these posters that we found framed, and we had a local restaurant who we adore, who, you know, likes the festival, do a show in the restaurant, and we weren't sure if the naked Padalecki poster was going to make it through the month that we were up there, and it did not, you know, and they were like, we like it, but, you know, there's just too many patrons who are, you know, not okay with this naked picture in here. And then this one, they, to their credit, they left it up, but they said that there were many patrons who felt it was disturbing. And it's fantastic. You know, it's one of the ones that's up in our office as well. Okay, I'm so far, I think I've memorized the slideshow. I don't have a way of knowing what slide's coming up next, so I'm doing okay so far. I just also want to say, in terms of Vicky, I mean, she ran the festival for a long time and was just, in terms of her contributions, there were so many in terms of really shifting from that model that George had started in a different era to starting to get grant money, to start to get sponsorship, to host the 30th festival with this huge conference, which was a pretty historic event, and really get it sort of on a different level nationally and internationally as well. So we're very excited that she's here in town, and, you know, we're going to make sure that she's at the 50th as well. So Christina Hamilton, she started a few years prior to this. So she was very involved in the film festival and took over after the 40th festival when Vicky stepped down. And so I have some comments from her because she was very much involved in a real big transition for the film festival, mainly going from film only, 16 millimeter only, to opening it up to digital, which was, you know, very much a sign of the times of what was happening. And the festival had not made that move, and Christina very much championed and made that happen for the festival. So we have couple clips from her, and she talks, I think she first talks about the designs and then talks about that transition.
Well, I think that, you know, to me, the most interesting, relevant, and most beautiful part of that story is the first 20 years of the festival. Though, I mean, I think the 50 years in its entirety, you know, is an interesting story, and it is a story that one can see of an organization that, you know, takes that journey and that growth from, you know, being a handful of followers of the auteur to, you know, the institution that it's become, that's, you know, involves any number of people, you know, and that has, is not, no longer in the sole, you know, one designer leading the whole thing. You know, it's very different. It's also very different. The work, it's also indicative of the, you know, sort of like how the festival itself has grown in terms of the, there's a lot of different offerings that are going on. There's many, you know, the festival has grown not only in size, but in, you know, the number of screenings that are done and the amount of work that's been able to be shown and the fact that there's work that's shown outside of competition. You know, so it's, I think the visual component is, it's indicative of the beast, I guess.
The beast. Yeah, she's also, Christina's also a lot of fun to talk to. In a lot of these interviews, I mean, I talked to like 30, 40 minutes with each of these directors, and so, yeah, there's just so much rich history. I wish I could share more. And here's, I think, where she talks more about the transition to digital
exhibition.
We've
gone from, you know, wow, you've got everything on 16 millimeter. You can just put together what you want. You build it up on a reel. You go. We already, not only that, you know, when we were showing all 16 millimeter, we had all the films there already because we were screening on 16 millimeter as well. So it, there wasn't even a matter of having to contact filmmakers and then get their, you know, their exhibition copy. We already had it. So it was just a matter of, you know, ordering the films that needed to be, you know, into the screen in order in the programs, putting them in bins and taking them to the theater and building them into reels. And the first year that we changed that, yeah, I mean, it was actually one of the reasons why when we did the 41st Festival, I knew that I wanted to open to all formats, but I knew that I needed the year to figure out how we were going to do it from a, you know, internal structural basis. Just how were we going to reorganize screening and programming and all of our, you know, projection capabilities to be able to, you know, take that in. And I knew that if we just, by opening to 35 and 8 millimeter, it's going to give us enough of a sort of mind shift in how we're thinking that we can begin to, you know, look to the future and plan backwards.
And I think, as many of you know, Christina is still in Ann Arbor. She is running the Penny Stamps lecture series through the University of Michigan School of Art and Design. So somebody we get to work with very closely for the festival, and it's a lot of fun working with Christina. And so that pretty much brings us up to sort of this, you know, past 10 years, past five-year period, at which point I didn't record myself. I'm here. So I figured I would talk just a little bit about sort of this latest edition. And I came in 2006. I moved to Michigan. Even though I grew up here, I'd moved away and moved back. And I didn't know much about the festival from even going to school at University of Michigan until I moved out to San Francisco and started to make film that I started to hear a lot about the Ann Arbor Film Festival and how amazing it was and how great it was. And it was just surprising that I didn't hear that so much as an undergrad here at the university. And so when I moved back, I immediately wanted to get involved. And Kristen McArdle had taken over as the director after Christina. Dan Morano, who's still in town as well, he ran it for a year. That 43rd, Christina was the artistic director and Dan was the executive director, festival director. So then Kristen took it over, and that was the time right when I showed up, when we ended up having a really interesting situation with the state and funding and this big censorship case where the ACLU stepped in and sued the state of Michigan on behalf of the film festival over showing some controversial films. And I think a lot of you have already heard that story. I'm not going to go into that story, although it is an interesting one. But you'll see visually that this is the first year that I was here in town and I was just helping out the festival, but very much consulting on, well, what are we going to do design-wise? And this was one of the films that was cited in that case called Booby Girl, which was a cartoon, a five-minute cartoon that had won a Student Academy Award. It had the voice from Bullwinkle. You know, it was very much a PG film, and they cited this as one of the offensive films in this whole debacle. So Brooke Kiesling, who at the time was here in Detroit as an animator, she was happy to lend her character and create some new artwork for this year. And you'll see that it played out, you know, this is the front of the program guide, the posters, and, you know, we do this traveling tour around the country. And so she had all these sort of fun elements, and you'll see that, you know, we sort of put that together, and that played its way out through that season. So the next year, we very much wanted the design to get people here in town to pay more attention to this history. In many ways, it was kind of a lead-in towards this 50th, that the 50th was actually approaching. The festival also, this year, was very much in financial crisis, which was in many ways due to this censorship funding controversy that started. So the festival was in danger of closing. 2007, it was pretty much in crisis, and we had to put together a fundraising campaign to save it, fortunately, which we did. And so going through that experience of sort of standing up for artists and for freedom of expression, and ultimately winning this lawsuit and getting the language of state funding changed so we felt it was constitutional, we were out of money. So the festival was in a really bad situation. So this year's design in many ways was an attempt to make people in this community especially recognize the history and recognize the importance and the value of this cultural event, this cultural anchor event. And so you'll see on the back, this year, and this was distributed widely this year. This is the first year the program book had come out early. We got it done. I wanted it done a month ahead of time, which is the model I had been taught, you know, out in California, was you have your whole program book done a month early and you distribute it so people can pick it up and read. Well, here it was normally done the night before, maybe even the day of opening night. And so I pulled several nighters because I felt this was critical to get this out. And we made it about 3 weeks, maybe even a little less than 3 weeks before the festival, and these were everywhere. And on the back of the program book, we really wanted people here to have a sense of sort of some of the touch points, some of the important history that I just found that people here didn't know. They didn't realize that this was an Academy qualifying festival, that some of these people, that Andy Warhol had come here with the Velvet Underground, that this was an important part of our cultural history in this area that was just pretty much unknown, except for actually a lot of the people here tonight in this room. And so big, big thanks to Myrna Jean Rugg, who's over here in the audience, for doing pretty much most of this research at that time and pulling this together. And so for me, this year's graphics very much are a reflection of what the organization was going through and really just making sure, like, hey, it is time to watch. Like, pay attention to what this festival's about. And we ultimately wanted to have watches created that we could sell, and it got a little too expensive and involved for that. So then, you know, we have you know, several other years before we got to this past year's design. And one thing that we've talked about quite a bit this past year was we really want to make sure that we're having some of that physical, real-world quality within the imagery. Something we really appreciated about George in that era is that it's very much cut and paste, and you can feel it. You can tell this wasn't all very digitally lined up, and everything's not these super clean lines. And so that's one of the things we really wanted to go for this past year, was the fact that you can see there's film grain, that there's sort of this warmth of the image, and that it's not sort of this very digital clean lines that you sort of see happen as we hit the 90s and we hit the early 2000s within the festival. So yeah, for us it's very much a reflection of, you know, again, the evolution of the organization. And I think I have one more. This was our call for entries postcard for the 50th festival, and we're sort of bringing it full circle because George Manupelli did this collage for us, and this was the postcard that went out nationally, internationally. And, you know, again, it really reflects, again, George's cutout sort of approach to making his art, but also his sense of humor, which is something that very much embodied a lot of the festival's designs, not just from him, but it really carried on throughout many of the festival directors. So I think that's my presentation, my part of the presentation. And at this point, I would encourage anybody who wants to add something. Maybe you feel like I missed a piece there. You even have a question, because some people in this audience might be able to answer. But I would invite you to go up to the microphone. I know it can seem intimidating. Oh, no, I see actually a whole bunch of people just swarming to the microphone. Okay, Myrna's starting the swarm. She's the contagion of the swarm.
Is this... I'm a little short, but...
Can we... Thank you.
Okay. I don't have any questions or anything, but I have some information that I wanted to share. A number of you already know about how we house filmmakers. We have complimentary housing for filmmakers. I'm on the board, and I'm also the housing coordinator. And we're expecting a huge influx of people this year that'll want to come in for the festival. And I have housed people all over town, places in the Old West Side where I live, and other near neighborhoods. And if anybody's interested in housing a filmmaker, I wrote an article for the Old West Side News. There are copies of it on the table over here, so it has contact information for me. Some of the filmmakers come for a day or two. Some come for the whole week. They usually stay up late. They're out at the Michigan Theater or at the after parties. They really require little maintenance. They do like to have coffee in the morning or tea and a little bit of breakfast stuff. But the contact information for me is in the article on the table there, or you can go to the website for the Ann Arbor Film Festival, aafilmfest.org, find out more information, give me a call, and you get a free pass, a full free pass for housing a filmmaker that includes the opening night gala, and you get the fun of meeting a filmmaker. Could be from Europe, could be from Japan, could be from Ohio. You know, there's just wonderful people that come into town for this, and I think anybody who's hosted has really enjoyed it, and I know our filmmakers have always enjoyed staying with the families in town. So thank you.
Thanks, Myrna. And it really is one of the very unique and special parts of our film festival. And it's a testament to this community that so many people open up their homes. And it makes it affordable for a lot of these filmmakers. Oftentimes, you know, somebody makes a 5-minute, 2-minute, 8, 10, 12-minute short film. And to have somebody put you up so you don't have to pay for a hotel makes a huge difference for a lot of these filmmakers. And it's a big part of the reason we get so many artists coming here, which really just makes it so much more of a special event. And again, that's something that is made possible by this community, by a lot of you. Jacqueline.
Hi. I have one question and one comment. My question is, I'm interested if this archive is going to have a sort of family tree or some sort of database of the people that have been involved each year. I know that I've been involved for about on and off for about 10 years, and there are some friends of mine, Carrie Caccini, she was the assistant director in the early 2000s, Vera Bruner's song, she did lots of the posters, a friend, Shrihari Sethi, he did a lot of work with the festival. I'm just wondering if there's any way we can compile like who was involved every year so they can be remembered, because there's a lot of these little names that people might not, you know, sort of know, but they were still really important to the history. So I don't know if that's going to be part of.
Well, I think, that's a great question, because ultimately, yes, and that's definitely something that we've been working on. I think for us, it's even been sort of a case of going in steps. So for us, one of the huge projects has been just finding out all the films that ever played in Ann Arbor, making sure it's pretty accurate what year they played and making that. And that's been sort of our first step. And it's been a ton of work. And we're getting closer. And we'll get to the point where that information's there, then what won awards, what went on the tour. And then that's the kind of information that then would follow suit. In the meantime, we do, I think most of the years, there is a program book. And at least, you know, probably the last 20 years, if not more, since they started doing more booklet form as opposed to just the sheet, there's usually the credit. So you can go in and see, for instance, the 46th Festival, and you can look page by page and see we list all the staff. That's not quite the same as sort of a very indexed version, but I think there is ways to search. Can you search all the text that's on there now? So if you put in your name, in theory, it should show up. We should be able to find which programs you were in. So, but that's definitely the kind of information that we are working towards. And you know, we have some great volunteers who are also working with us on this, as well as Sam Haddix is another person who's been doing a ton of research on this project the past few months. And your other?
Just a really quick comment. For those of you who don't know, my name is Jacqueline Wood, and I actually work for the festival. I do the new education program. So I've been going around to lots of high schools the past few months, teaching kids about experimental film, showing them really weird movies. Today, I was at Lincoln High doing a presentation for 70 students. And I'm like, you know, talking about movies, showing movies, and all of a sudden, this boy in the front row raises his hand, and he says, "I'm George Manupelli's grandson." And I was just like starstruck. I was blown away. It was just the craziest moment. Nobody else in the room knew who George Manupelli was, and I was just like, okay, I'm going to talk to you after. He was such a sweet boy, and on the feedback form, I pass out feedback forms for all the kids to give me feedback about the presentation, and he wrote, "George Manupelli is my grandfather. I've seen experimental work my whole life. This is nothing new." Like, so he wasn't opened, his eyes were not open at all. They've been opened his whole life. So anyways, I thought I'd share that. I haven't even told my boss, Donald, yet.
I love that. It's a goal to make all the, you know, everybody in Ann Arbor just so jaded of like, oh, come on. We've seen that avant-garde stuff. The new, show us something really original.
That was my neat Ann Arbor history moment today, Ann Arbor Film Festival history moment today.
So. Thanks, Jacqueline. Yeah, it really is quite a treat to read the first 20-year history, and I know, David, you've read Ruth's dissertation as well. And I think, you know, especially working in the festival, this really hits home, but it's amazing, I think a lot of you would relate to this too, that a lot of the same challenges and questions and comments that we hear now are no different than they were after the third, back in, you know, mid-60s or the 70s, you know, early 70s. It's, you know, same like, we're not, you know, it's not that original. We've seen this stuff before. And you're like, wow, that was like 67. And they're saying, you know, this year they've kind of covered it all. You know, and for us, we're looking back to then as like the golden, you know, age of all when all this stuff was, you know, coming out, and we're not seeing anything new. So it's just kind of one of those things. And some of the other sort of typical comments and gripes. Oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of the same things are exactly what we still talk about now, and we still deal. You know, at the end of the day, they were screening films to an audience and, you know, getting artists to share their work, and that's still what we do today. And so I think, are there any other? Yeah, there's another comment here.
I've always been interested in the musical aspect of the film festival. There's some fantastic experimental music. I'm curious as to whether there's ever been any live music melded to a film presentation at the festival. I don't remember one, but it could be that I didn't see it.
Oh, sure, there has been, and I think, David, you might even be able to speak more about that. I know that that's something that's in the works for the 50th, and it's something that we are very excited about having every year at the festival, some live performance with live music happening.
Yeah, I mean, as Donald mentioned, I think one of the more well-known, kind of infamous early examples was when the Velvet Underground did appear and perform to films by Andy Warhol, and that happened.
I think it was the 4th.
4th, that early? Okay. And then, yeah. But even just looking through the early programs, because the festivals started with a kind of synergy with the once music group activities. There was a kind of, seemed like a lot of overlap there. So even, I think in the first or second festival, they had live music accompanying like a bank of Super 8 projectors for one of the programs. And that was like in the first or second year. So, I think we might be able to, I'm not sure, yeah. Yeah, and then that has kind of continued, at least in the 2 years ago, we had Flying Lotus perform original score to Harry Smith animation. So, and, we'll actually have something for the 50th as well.
Yeah, and I think there's also been a lot of the films that deal with musicians, films about musicians working collaboratively with musicians. Last few years, we started a music video program because we were getting a lot of music videos, and there was sort of kind of hard to figure out how to insert those into the festival, and so you know we've started to add that component as well. One other thing that occurred to me to mention is related to this, to the archive, is that we also have a paper archive where you can go and you can look at a lot of these papers and a lot more at the University of Michigan Bentley Library up on North Campus. And you know, they were very generous in terms of working with us and then the Ann Arbor District Library in terms of sort of sharing this archive. So a lot more of the papers are up there, and we're going to be adding to that as well so that people can come in and do research, as one gentleman here is doing. You know, and that's a very important resource to sort of collect that history and make sure it's preserved, that it doesn't end up in somebody's basement and water damaged and lost. So I just wanted to mention that as well. That's a resource for you or for other people you know that want to find out more about this history. If it's not here on the library's website, it might be up in the archive at the Bentley Library. Are there any other stories? Clark, I thought you might have one. I think, Clark, you've been going since the second Ann Arbor Film Festival?
Yes, I've seen a lot of movies. And generally, I've been to all the showings, not just been attending. Just like a couple of things were coming through my mind today and reminiscing. One is that when George ran the festival, especially in the early days, he would have, for example, a 7 to 9 o'clock showing and a 9 to 11 o'clock and 11